Welcome to episode 13 of Island CT Podcast.
A podcast about science, technology, and education, and Oshpark boards.
I'm Kelly.
And I'm Patrick, and together we are the hosts of the Island CT Podcast.
Okay, so we have a few administration things I want to go over. First, we're recording a few days early because I'll be away.
So it's July 1st?
July 1st. And our podcast will be posted the 5th.
Along with several others. I'm having a hard time getting through this.
We've had several problems with recording, and we're just starting to get a system that works and hopefully is more streamlined. We're still working. Last podcast,
So this is more complicated than this.
Yeah, it is.
The last podcast is not up yet.
No.
Your blog is up on my computer, but it's not up on the website.
Right.
That's on the Apache server.
Mm-hmm.
But even that doesn't make sense, because we're back to this situation where you can get in, you can get to the Island CT Frontal Harvest website if you go through our IP address. But so the server's been down. Remember the computer was crashing all the time? So that's what I'm talking about. The server went down for several days and
I
brought it back. But I checked, so it's up and running, right? But I checked the ddns.net website, and it doesn't link to the Island CT web pages anymore. So I've got to fix that. And so, yeah.
So we have Pat's blog entry 25 up, and mine will be coming the 26th.
Well, yours. Right.
Right. As blog posting 26.
Yeah, so I actually already put that one up.
You did.
Yeah.
You
but
did.
On my computer.
Mm-hmm. You right did. There. I noticed it.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I just haven't gotten a chance to get it on the server yet. So, well, do you want me to do mine?
Yeah, I would. Okay. I'm looking forward to that.
So this is kind of
great week.
It was called Progress. It's all about fantastic little successes, but at the time, it was a dark time. And the thing is, what happened is
a dark night of electronics.
Yeah. A dark night of, I don't know. But, you know, out of desperation, so this blog entry came out. And now, it seems so far in the past because this weekend was so incredible.
It was.
But I'll hold off, because we'll talk about this weekend when we talk about it.
Oh, okay, great. Okay.
I mean, this is about this. It's supposed to be my blog entry.
Right.
So I talked about these things that we've been trying to get to work. One of them was some Oshpark boards. And at the time I wrote the blog entry, I still didn't have it working. And there were a lot of stuff there was a lot of stuff that wasn't working, but you know, there were little things that I figured out how to do here and there, and suddenly things solved. And so I called it Progress. It's all about fantastic little successes, because even though you don't have a final solution to your problem, you work through parts of it. You divide it up into parts that you can really work on very carefully, controlling as many variables as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And you get stuff to work. And it feels like, when you get something to work like that, it feels like a huge success. That's why I call them fantastic little successes.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at what you've actually accomplished, it's only after months of work that you make this little step that suddenly there's something different.
Right.
And that's this great feeling you have, and it keeps you going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what it was about. So much has happened since then. I mean, I've been working so hard at this. I don't even remember half of what I wrote, but I see here, looking at the website, about the Oshpark boards, which I know weren't working back then, the 18 Mega 328. Well, I'd gotten it to work again with AVRC, I think. Yeah. So, got that working. Anyway. So that's all it was about. And, I don't want to talk too much about the Oshpark boards and our transmitters, because I want to talk about what happened this weekend later on in the podcast.
Okay. Super. Super.
So your blog entry.
Okay.
Here's Looking at You, it's called.
So.
And I know what this is about.
Yeah. So on June 23rd, I had my left eye surgery for cataracts, and it has been incredible. Day after surgery, I had 25/20 vision. And over the week, I noticed my vision improving each day. And Luke and I went to see Jurassic Park, the new movie out. And when I was watching the movie, I realized I have never seen a movie this clear. And it was just a really neat feeling to have that realization. Also, the green in trees is true green. It was washed out and more yellow than the green that it is now for me. And so I find that I stare at trees a lot and just the green.
Yeah, I wonder, because you had the type of cataracts that's at the back of the eye and it spreads light all over the retina. And I wonder how much of the washout feeling you're mentioning has to do with the fact that there was a lot of stray light hitting.
So right.
Of course, the color could not be as saturated if you have all the other colors coming
right
in at the same time. I mean, I don't know. I'm just making it up as I go.
How it works. And I'm not sure. But really neat. I'm able to see birds in the sky at heights that I've never seen before. And planes making contrails in the sky that I have not noticed before. So really nice. And
we'll have to go on. You remember, we haven't looked at it for a while, but we used to look at the Heavens Above website and see when the satellites were passing. And the International Space Station. Oh, did you see in the news? You say you just looked at the news recently. Do you see there was a rocket that blew up?
No. No, I didn't even catch that.
One of the SpaceX rockets or whatever that's resupplying the International Space Station.
Oh, yes, and the cargo.
Blew up.
Yeah, and it's something about the cargo, and it's like this cargo that they've been trying to get up several times.
I don't know.
And but it hasn't made it.
At lunch, I just took a quick look, and all I know is that
they
think it's something about one of the stages in the rocket.
Disappointing.
But anyway.
Anyway.
It'll be fun to see when the International Space Station goes ahead and stuff. Well, that was very bright. You probably could see that okay.
No, but I don't remember.
You don't remember? Yeah. Because in Georgia, we looked at that with the kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I didn't always get it.
Anyway.
But
that'll be fun.
Really excited about Bear Island. I think that I might notice things that I haven't seen yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Or just a new clarity on it.
Yeah.
My favorite is to see brown pelicans soaring over the waves. It's just, there's something about it that I could watch it for hours.
They are really neat looking.
Aren't they? When they go in a line and they get five or six following each other. And I can't wait to see them this year, because I think I might even have a clarity that I didn't have before. So fun. And, you know, there's still some issues. I have difficulty reading computer screens without things being bold and at different font size than normal. But that, I think, will change over time as my eyes start to learn how to connect to my brain in a new way. So, I've had a very good experience.
For me, it's been amazing to watch you as every day goes by and things change.
Yeah.
So.
And that kind of wraps up
our blog entries.
Yeah, yep. Our blog entries.
So, what do you want? My minor topics?
How about your minor topics? Because I started talking to you about mine earlier.
So, I have five.
Five?
Yeah. They're all really
minor. You're trying to outdo me.
Just little snips. Okay. Usually when we do minor topics, sometimes they go on and they're way bigger than we thought.
They become little beasts.
Yeah. Plus, I have two that we did together.
Yeah.
Which you might not remember. One of them will be. Anyway. So one of them, I told you about three of them just after you picked me up from work and we went for a coffee.
Mm-hmm.
One is the Philae-Lander. Mm-hmm. On Comet, I don't remember. I think it's like P65 or P67. See if I can find it. But anyway, it landed in November, except, last year in November, except it bounced, didn't quite land correctly, and ended up in a crater, they think. Anyway, in shadow. And so... Well, there's a comet, 67P, comet 67P, Churyumov-Gerasimenko. And, it sent out data for a while until the batteries ran out, and then it went into hibernation. Well, just a few days ago, I think. So this is a news story from Science magazine.
Mm-hmm.
It sent out just... a few seconds of transmission. Let me see. 85-second transmission. Yeah. Containing 300 data packets. This is from the news story on June 19th. And then there was a second shorter transmission a bit later. And they looked at the data. So the transmissions we're receiving from the orbiter above it, Rosetta. And so... So Philae is transmitting stuff to Rosetta, and then Rosetta's got more power and sending it
right.
To And they think it woke up actually maybe, I think, like just a few days before the first transmission.
Exciting.
And it's just slowly heating up. And the comet has a 12-hour day.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's getting, I don't know, like 3 hours of light, I think they said. Yeah, 3 hours of light every day. So at peak power, it's generating about 24 watts.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not a lot.
No.
But you need a minimum of 19 watts.
A little less than our lawnmower.
How much is lawnmower?
Lawnmower's 40.
40 when it's really going.
Yeah.
Okay. So for communication
mm-hmm.
from Philae, you need 19 watts.
Mm-hmm.
That's the absolute minimum. So it's above that. So it's sending out these packets every so often. Its temperature is minus 5C. I had said minus 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. Like, minus 5C, that's pretty warm.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
And it...
We've camped in that.
Yeah, we've camped in minus 16. Do you remember that time between the pass between Algonquin and Wright, is it?
Yeah.
Minus 16...
it was so rough, and we had this.
It was actually I came out of that thinking, I can do minus 16.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't that bad.
No, it wasn't that bad. What was rough is having this expedition team beside us with all the latest equipment, and we had a 1999 tent from
Canadian
Ames.
Tire.
Or was it
Canadian? Yeah, it was Canadian Tire.
It was the lamest tent.
There was no zipper closing.
We had to do the
snow,
ties, and we're like,
the
it's
ties.
Cold.
The snow melted, and we started to, because our things went deep enough, so we ended up in a bowl.
We ended up in, like, a 2-foot bowl.
Yeah. And do you remember we tried to make corned beef.
Yeah.
Before we had good camping gear. And I put it on the stove. And the bottom was, that's the thing about camping in a pass. The wind whizzes by.
Oh, yeah.
And I was trying to shelter it from the wind. And I had the stove. It was a Coleman stove.
Remember the sound.
Which is, well, yeah, because the top was frozen. So I was taking that stick and shoving it through the top to make holes, but the bottom was burning. And so every time I'd make a hole, it would shoot up through. We must have lost a third of that corned beef. And then finally, enough of it melted so that I could mix it up. And it was lukewarm.
And we didn't eat it.
It felt totally, yeah. It tasted totally burnt.
We ate tuna that night or something. It was strange.
And then we couldn't sleep through the night because the problem is we didn't have enough
insulation
on the bottom.
Yeah.
I don't know if we had ridge rest at the time or what.
We didn't. Well...
Well, we had something.
We did have a ridge rest or something like
it. But it was the thinner
one. It was the thinner one, yeah. And it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we decided at all, 4, 5 in the morning, which is our wake-up time, normally.
Yeah. And
if when we're hiking at altitude, 4 or 5, or earlier, we get up.
Yeah, because we catch these awesome dawns when we do that.
I know.
So
the time
it goats us on to,
yeah,
to do that
time
more.
Yeah, the time we kind of... Upper Wolfjaw, Gothics.
Yeah.
And then, we were looking back when we were going up Upper Wolfjaw, and you could see across the pass on the other side to Lower Wolfjaw, and the sun hit the clouds, and we couldn't see the sun because it was on the other side,
right.
But it hit the clouds, and suddenly the clouds rose up, and these tendrils from the clouds were all the way down to them. That was absolutely beautiful.
It was.
And then we got to the top of, I think Gothics is higher than Armstrong. Mm-hmm. I think Gothics was the highest peak.
Yeah.
And we had breakfast up there.
Yeah.
Against that huge boulder.
Yeah.
And the wind was whizzing overhead. Mm-hmm. Remember what we had for breakfast?
Oranges.
The oranges. And our hands were totally just, and they tasted so good. And the hands were freezing from trying to open up the oranges. Mm-hmm. But, oh, that was wonderful.
Yep. Ah, yeah. We digressed.
There's some things that get us a bit exciting. Excited.
Hiking is one of them.
Hiking at altitude. Well,
but can you imagine the researchers who they think they have a dud? And not only that, they've been made fun of by other labs by this point.
Yeah.
And then...
But I understood that they thought that they were expecting it to come back.
Oh, good. Yeah. See, I thought it was more of a hopeless situation. No. And I was like... Oh, wouldn't it have felt good? Because it's like, yeah, buddy, we got it. He talked to us today.
Yeah. No, the way I think there was more of a big worry, but mm-hmm. not. But I think the general consensus was, okay, it's out of battery. It shuts down, goes to hibernation, and then the comet approaches the sun and rotates to different angles to the sun, and then it starts to get light. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to come back.
Right.
So that's what should happen. But then there's the worry, right? Because it's shut off for an awful long time.
And then you get the cold and heating.
And during that time you get the cold. Yeah.
And then you don't know what has happened inside the electronics.
Exactly.
And, I think and that was the worry. And how that upsets the system. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was out for 7 months.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
I'm happy for them.
So I can't wait to hear what happens next. They say they're making plans as it gets, they're going to wait a bit longer until the batteries are more charged or until it gets more power on a daily basis. And the first instruments to come back are the lowest power ones, and they just require 5 watts. So this is like just measuring temperature, magnetic field, electrical conductivity of the comet surface. This is right off the article.
Okay.
Medium power will come a little bit later. 15 watts required for that.
Nice.
That's like the cameras, radio ranging type stuff. And then, maybe when they get really full power, if they can get 25 watts to spare, then they have, 2 ovens. That I guess I'm not sure, but I think it must scoop up some of the soil from the comet,
dump it
in the oven, and to release anything that's volatile and have it flow through a spectrometer, do some chemistry.
One thing we didn't mention is where did you get this from? What?
No, I did.
Science. Oh, did you? Okay. I didn't think you had. Sorry.
And June 19th.
Nice.
The AAAS Science.
Nice.
Well, I was sure this was going to be a super short minor topic. Okay, but the next one will be. So from the same one. There was a book review, and I usually don't, I love to read a lot of the book reviews, but I don't tend to talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
But this is Neal Stephenson's book, Seven S's. I don't know, how do you pronounce that? I mean, it's kind of Seven S's. Seven Eves. How do you spell that? S-E-V-E-N-E-V-E-S?
Mm-hmm.
Seven Eves. Anyway, but the reason I'm going to bring it up is because the guy who reviewed it in Science, I think he's an astrophysicist, and I'm not seeing what he is right now, but he actually said that he was trying to figure out orbital mechanics that were described in the book, or rather situations were described in the book,
mm-hmm.
and he knows how to do the orbital mechanics, and so he figured it out and came up with the same answer.
Neat.
So Neal Stephenson must have done some pretty heavy research.
Fun.
And I guess there's a ton of orbital mechanics in the book, so that's going to be real interesting. And it's sitting here next to me because we got it for Luke.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you
but
know what?
Well, it's not going to quite go to Luke.
It's not going to get to Luke. He'll have it later. Holy, this sounds really incredible.
This is going to Bear Island for yeah. Patrick.
The author? I mean, the reviewer?
Yeah.
He said, whatever the standard is for hard science fiction, surely Stephenson has blown it out of the water.
Oh, how cool.
I don't know about the biology. I'm kind of skeptical about that part.
Well, it'd be neat to go through it, and you can, and then we can talk about it
as
we go through it. It's fun.
So that was my second minor topic.
Okay.
His book is out, and it sounds really cool.
Okay. Do you want me to do two of mine and back to yours? Or do you want
I'm just on a whole roll. Let's just let you go. Because I'm in the order of the sheet you prepared for me.
You're feeling the power. That's not on my sheet. You added it.
I added it to your sheet, but you had it in this order.
I know I did.
So I'm following your instructions here. Okay. So the other one is, I really didn't want to forget these next two.
Okay.
One is, I think Luke's going to find really interesting because he's big on technology.
Mm-hmm.
So it's some, it's a kind of a new story again out of Science.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about fiber optics used for the internet. I guess we're coming up to a huge bottleneck.
Oh, really?
The demand. So I'm going to show you the graph. This is mm-hmm. out of June 26th, Science.
Okay.
And this curve that I'm showing Kelly right now basically shows years on the x-axis and gigabits per second in the lower part and terabits per second. And this is a log scale. And basically,
whoa.
The capacity for the internet has just gone through the roof. The blue line mm-hmm. the one lower is the one that's actually being used by commercial networks as opposed to the fancy experimental mm-hmm. networks. And the point they're making, though, is that the demand is increasing like, I'm trying to find it here. It was like, I can't find it. But the demand for capacity, 60% per year increase since 2000.
Wow.
So, I mean, as good as we're getting with these fiber optics, they say we just have like a few years, like 2 years. And then we're going to reach such bottlenecks
that something will have to be done.
Anything that's high, that you want, that's high bandwidth video and stuff like that, it's just not going to work.
Wow.
It'll crawl to a stop. Anyway, so this research describes the physics of how they work and how we can get around a problem we're currently having. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If they implement it, it'll buy us another couple of years at most.
mm-hmm.
But it's really neat. And the reason is, the way I guess it works is, it used to be that these signals were sent down copper wires, right? And they found you can get a hell of a lot more through using light in fiber optic cables,
mm-hmm.
right? In each strand, you send pulses of light. Light's on, it's a one, light's on, right. off is a zero. right? Mm-hmm. But you can send different colors of light, and they don't interfere with each other. So one fiber at exactly the same time,
you can send. I had no idea that would be the case.
Yeah, you can send like 100 different signals at the same time. The problem is that if you try to send it over really long distance, mm-hmm. then there's a very slight effect that causes the light as it goes through to cause a shift in electrons on the side of the fiber.
Okay.
And that then affects the other wavelengths and changes them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get a combination of them to create another wavelength, a third mm-hmm. wavelength, and that causes the quality of the signal to degrade.
Got right? it.
So if you try to add more, a greater number of signals, so smaller difference between each wavelength, or you try to send it further, then that accumulates,
mm-hmm.
and you have a problem. And it looks like about 1,000 kilometers is kind of the limit.
Wow.
And if, well, no, sorry, thousands of kilometers are a problem. So New York to LA is the example they gave is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's these stations at 1,000 kilometer intervals, maybe, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But they basically, they take in the signal from the light, which was created by lasers.
Mm-hmm.
The centers convert it back to data, and then lasers on the other side reshoot them off so they were good again. And that really slows things down.
Okay.
So what these people found out is that the reason that you can't figure out if the two signals are drifting together or apart and stuff, because each color is created by a different laser.
Got it.
So they're all changing independently. So trying to reconstruct, if you go too far, what the original signal was is tough.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did is they created some kind of a system where you use a single laser.
Mm-hmm.
You shoot it into this thing, and it converts it to packets of different sizes at different light with different wavelengths. And then you can shoot all these different wavelengths for your different signals. And since they were created by a single laser, then when one shifts slightly to longer or shorter wavelength, they all shift exactly the same amount,
mm-hmm.
which means at the other end, it's a hell of a lot easier
right.
to figure out what's happening so you mm-hmm. can send it a lot further.
Got it.
And they've already proved that they can get twice the bandwidth through, and they say they have already a clear view of how to get another two times more, so that's four times. And they think they can buy us a couple of years, at least.
Wow. That is really neat.
Yeah. There's, now, of course, that, you know, requires changing all of the
mm-hmm.
lasers that are being used in the system, so it's not cheap. But in the future, eventually what's going to happen is we're going to have to lay down more cable, and I guess that's really expensive.
Yeah.
So, interesting times ahead.
Yeah.
And that was my, I thought that the technology in there was so complicated and yet so clear, right? It's a complicated
right.
system, but it's really understandable.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, it is. Definitely.
And my last minor topic. So, you know, we had great successes. And so I've moved on from some of our work and started to work with the SI5351,
mm-hmm.
which is a chip which we've been wanting to get work. I mean, we've had it sitting in the house since, I don't know when we got it.
So have you named her yet?
Jen. Named her? SI5351. I call her Vera. Anyway, that's an obscure reference. So I started working with it. It's basically a chip that creates signals of all frequencies from basically
right.
DC up to, I think, 160 megahertz.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really interested because around 3.5 megahertz, we can use it for RDIF.
Yeah,
transmitters. And then even better, I mean, it gets us away from crystals.
Right. And crystals are just very difficult.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's impossible, right? I mean, a crystal is very stable. You just hook it up and it works, right? But it's not just difficult to get a different frequency from a crystal. It's impossible. Not in the same band, right? You could get a harmonic somewhere way up in the ether somewhere. So we can't, you know, we've got our transmitters we're building now are kind of stuck at one frequency. So the SI-5351 gives us versatility and allows us to have a homing beacon without trying to figure out a different crystal. So that would be really handy. This guy, Jason Mildrum, Mill is spelled with two L's, Mildrum, he wrote a library for AVRC, for the AVR GCC compiler.
Nice.
And I started working with that, and, well, it's not working very well. Oh, well, I told you the 22%.
So yeah, the error seems like, there's something there.
It's always 22% too low the frequency I'm getting at, which is weird. And also, there was an error that, so these chips use a Harvard architecture. Well, so the SI-5351 is the oscillator chip, right? But I'm controlling it with an ATmega. Mm-hmm. And I'm programming that with Jason Mildrum's library. Had lots of problems initially because it has the Harvard architecture instead of Von Neumann like our computers.
Right.
And I was getting these... AVR GCC handles that by setting different starting points for flash versus EEPROM versus different types. Mm-hmm. And I had these error messages saying some of my memory addresses were just totally out of range because I didn't know in the makefile I have to put in a statement to convert it back to zero offset, and it was the EEPROM. Is that what it was? Yeah, it must have been. Mm-hmm. Anyway, solved that, but I still don't have it working. But, I mean, it's an exciting little thing. And so far I've gotten Jason Mildrum's library at least programming the AVR. So that's really cool.
Neat.
Anyway, that is all of my minor topics.
Very good. I like them.
Got through them before you stopped me.
You did. And I was very good because I was like, our minor have become major once again.
So tell me your...
Okay. So I have a few minor, too. And one, surviving Ebola. After recovering from Ebola, some patients are struggling with other health problems. And the reason...
The link below for that?
Yeah, that's article. The link for that article. The reason I became interested in this is after reading about measles and, you know, how when a person comes down with measles, it wipes out their immunity. And so it grabbed my curiosity to see what they were going to do as potential studies. So one of the things...
Yeah, because it's got to sound similar to that kind of problem.
Right.
It's all about what happens after the person has survived, right?
Right. So these people who have survived, they do have like conditions that they have found, like eye problems, hearing loss, headaches, joint pain, erectile dysfunction, fatigue, and other survival symptoms, like that might be more of going through the whole trauma of having Ebola.
So these are not from secondary infections. This is Ebola has ravaged their bodies to such an extent.
No, okay. they had Ebola, they recovered.
Gotcha.
And what they found, or what they're planning on doing in the study, which I thought was pretty cool, and that's what I was hoping for, is they're going to follow these patients every 6 months for the next 5 years and see what happens. So they'll have a good epidemiological survey of these patients and maybe be able to help people that are going through it.
Oh, I just got the article.
Great. And some of the problems yes. or some of the surprises that I found is that the Ebola virus was isolated from semen of survivors. And, you know, it's one.
I remember we were talking that when about that when we were having coffee.
Yeah, and they
That's
didn't.
Really.
It's, you know, and they're
so
like.
So these people are carriers.
They're carrying it. But yet, you know, I'm not sure if someone has broken down with Ebola from that particular situation. However, you know, I don't know, but it's just, it's one of the things that they're asking people who have survived to start wearing condoms and that so that they do not transmit Ebola after the fact.
I'm just really curious to see, you know, the whole thing about Ebola is the increased permeability of the blood vessels and the loss of the integrity of the walls and stuff. And it's
right.
like, wow, what is, how are they handling having virus in them? Anyway, but this was more of about the medical programs and stuff.
Right. The other thing, and I kind of expected this, but I hadn't heard something specific, is the stigma that affects these patients, where once they've come and broken down with Ebola, how sometimes they aren't accepted back by their communities, relatives and families. And so...
I just found what the part that you had mentioned.
Yeah.
Ebola isolated from semen.
Yeah.
Of survivor 199 days.
Yeah.
After symptom onset.
Right. So they had Ebola, they broke out with it, and then after they broke out, 199 days after they broke out.
That's amazing.
It is. It's like, you know, a half year after.
Oh, now wait a second. Genetic material from Ebola virus. So they didn't isolate it. They didn't isolate viruses.
But they have...
They isolated genetic material from...
Yeah.
But you can't have... You can't be putting out Ebola DNA or RNA 199 days after onset of symptoms. And presumably you've either died or cured within a week, right?
Right.
So 199 days after, like two-thirds of a year, that's like... Well, you've been cured for a long time.
Right. And
there's got to be some active virus inside you for that to be possible.
Right. Right. Anyway, it was just, it surprised me, and it was something that stood out to me. You know, I'm curious to see what happens with that, and if it, you know, is actually something that's going to become more of a concern.
Yeah.
These people, they get really sick. Of course, they can't go on with work. They lose their jobs. And then they go back to their community, but their community doesn't really accept them. And also, the individual who survives Ebola may return to a family where, you know, six other members of their close family have died.
Right.
And so it's just this... having to rebuild after a trauma hits a community.
Right.
I can't state it in any other way. It's just going to be downright difficult and something that I think will need to be supported. Anyway, so very interesting article. I totally look forward to seeing some of the information they get about their ongoing study of the patients who have survived Ebola.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one. And I have to find my other to move back to the other screen. So I had this other one, very short, but...
Do I have this one on the guide or is...
No, this one is my secret one.
That's your secret one, okay.
So this came from the news. It's in the news article for Science. Uh-huh. And it's just really cool. So they developed this name for a neuron called Jennifer Aniston neuron.
Jennifer Aniston.
Aniston. So basically she's some kind of big actress. We would know that if we were more in the scene. But anyway, they found that there are particular neurons that encode particular people images. So that are very specific to those. And they discovered it with
linking people and places?
Yeah. So they link people and places.
Uh-huh.
And they link sometimes the clothing that they wear.
Huh.
So different clothing that they wear with it. And they discovered this through their work with people who have seizures. And they have removed parts of, and I can't remember what area, I have to look for it, an area of the brain. And that particular area, they believe, is for this encoding. And there's very specific cell responses for certain images.
Huh.
And I that just blew my mind. You know.
And do you know if these neurons are present all over, like what parts of the brain?
I know. I just realized that I didn't copy that part.
I didn't see it in there.
No. Let me look. I'll see if I still have the article.
It's centered on, not on very high level. It's centered on imagery, right? It's mm-hmm. mostly about images.
Yeah, it's on images.
Process. Okay. So probably in the back of the brain, and part of the visual system.
So it's for rapidly encoding associations. And this part of the brain is, let me see, medial temporal lobe, the MTL.
Okay. Medial temporal lobe.
Medial temporal lobe. So I just thought it was fascinating to think, wow, a cell can do all of that.
Well, I mean, what they know is that process no longer works when those cells are destroyed.
Right.
So it could be an integrator for a much greater number of cells doing something.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in a sense, it holds the property of being able to do that, right?
Right.
Its connections. So,
right.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. So just a very, there's much more to the story than what I got, but that's just a little tidbit.
And that's your minor topics?
That's all of my minor topics.
No, because we now have, you didn't have this, so I added minor topics together.
Oh, don't I put those under topics of interest, P and K.
Oh, but this is not going to be so long.
No. No, it's not.
So, you know what I have on there?
Minor topics. No, I don't. I just
assumed. The Antarctic video.
Oh, yeah.
You totally forgot. That was amazing.
It was a cool video.
I don't remember who put it together.
It was
someone who worked there.
It was someone who worked there.
Yeah. Anyway.
Who produced it.
We watched this video, 3 days ago or so?
Yeah. On Antarctica.
And
do you want me to try to pull it up so I can,
if you want.
I can check up
really,
the name.
But if you can, I couldn't find it very easily.
I can get the name of it.
It's one you found. You were looking mm-hmm. for that type of stuff. Anyway, and I think he's mostly involved in maintaining communications.
Mm-hmm.
And it talked about generally the experience that people have working in Antarctica. But not the researchers, more the maintenance crew. And it was absolutely fascinating. And it's fascinating to find out about what life is like down there in Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, everything is pretty extreme, of course. But then the video switches after you get this general feeling of what it's like down there to the people that stay there over the winter. And all the researchers are gone mm-hmm. and they're... specific support teams are gone, and it's just the people that are maintaining the base there.
Mm-hmm.
There's only 200, and I don't know. I thought it was just amazing.
Oh, Antarctica, a year.
A year on ice.
On ice.
Video.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And do you remember the people from the fire crew and... What you doing?
Oh, I was just trying to... It sometimes gives more information about the video. Okay, I was just hoping.
So tell me what you thought about it.
Oh, I thought it was great, and I loved. I loved the some. Well, what I thought was some very frank comments that people made. Like here they were. You know, at one point of the year, the plane leaves, and it doesn't come back for 6 months.
Yeah.
And so they have this party, kind of wave the plane off, and everybody talks about. Their sadness about seeing that plane fly off. Not many people are, like, they're excited, but they're kind of, you know.
A lot of them, it seems more than sad. It seems like, what the hell have I done?
Yes.
Why am I not on this?
Trepidation.
Yeah, because they're there for, I can't remember how long.
Yeah, for a year.
No, but over the winter. How long?
6 months.
6 months between planes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And so they've made a commitment. There's no going back.
Yeah.
And these people, they have this community that's not huge, 500 to start, where they have fully populated.
Well, this is at McMurdo.
Yeah.
So this is real. I mean, they talk a bit about the other stations, but it's really mostly about McMurdo, which is, mm-hmm. I think, a lot larger than anything else.
I think so.
And I don't know that during the year. But I think it's a lot more than 500.
I think it is. And then
their
population goes down to 200. Yeah. And it's just this drastic drop in population. And you know what I thought of is that we have like usually 260, 270 kids in the eighth grade. And that population is actually smaller than that. So you know everybody's name.
Yeah.
You know the quirks about, you know, who's who and, you know, where they are and that. So,
one guy was saying, you'll really like some people, you really won't like other people, but however you feel about them, the relationships are going to be intense.
I like that.
Yeah.
And then that small population suddenly expands to triple its size or more.
I think the guy said that when the first plane arrives, it doubles.
It doubles. Okay, it doubles its population. And
it probably more than triples in a very short time.
Right.
Because the planes start coming, right? I mean, I don't know, but as soon as the first one can, I think they start to, you know, there's a limited amount of time.
Right.
Everybody who's got a research project, probably, if they get their one, you know, they don't come back every year, most of them.
No, they probably
they get their one shot. They want to get their...
Early,
gather
as much and
because when that last plane leaves, that's it.
That's all their data.
They're out.
And they talk about the orange people arriving because they actually have color.
Color on their skin. Yeah.
I thought that was funny. And just how they just aren't ready for this happy little group to arrive excited about Antarctica. So it's just, it's worth seeing it. I think that it would be an incredible experience and a very challenging one to work through for a full year.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, I thought that was worth mentioning.
Yes.
It was.
It was.
I think
definitely.
Both of us were really hit by that documentary.
Yep.
So. Anyway, topics of interest. You don't have anything listed under yours.
No, it's hard to see.
Is,
and when you can't see, there's hard to get interested in anything.
You
can
walk.
You can
see now.
You can walk.
Oh, because you haven't done anything.
Yeah, because my eyesight was bad for a bit.
Well, I think my topics of interest, we're going to be talking about more in the future. Salt. We did it again. I was sure our minor topics were going to be a lot shorter than this. Anyway, even though this is more of a big one, I think I'm going to try to not go on too long about it.
Mm-hmm.
But this last weekend has seen such a change in where we are with all of our electronics projects,
right,
and Ardef going out in the woods and stuff.
Call it what it is. The Eureka weekend.
The Eureka weekend. Yeah. It's so big. I mean, that's what my next blog entry is going to be about.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And as a matter of fact, I started writing it already.
I thought you might.
It's mm-hmm. it's huge. Mm-hmm. So, Saturday was the first day. We have one 180 meter transmitter
mm-hmm.
that's working. We've used it. And we were working on the second one. Because if you don't have two, then you're really just going out, following one line. And you've got a signal the entire time. And it's either getting stronger or weaker. If it's getting weaker, you really screwed up. As I know you have done. but when you have two, one cuts out and then comes back. Mentally, it's a lot trickier.
I'm only silent because I'm a little hurt.
That was so funny. I was turned around because I'd come from a different direction to where we're going and stuff. And I wasn't totally sure because I was trying to follow you and I didn't. Okay, we should hold off because mm-hmm. we're talking about
we're
after the
6 seconds.
Yeah. We're talking about
digressing,
when
I should say.
Yeah,
sorry.
Digressing. We're talking about Sunday after all of our successes and we could enjoy mm-hmm. what we did. So we'll get back to it. But we'd been working hard to get another one put together and we wanted to make it, you wanted to make it smaller.
Mm-hmm.
You were the real push behind that. I was really doing a lot of experimentation and it was making stuff big.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because you fool around with stuff, you'd make it in parts, you put mm-hmm. them together, try different ones. But you're right, if we're going to be running in the woods, we need to have it smaller. So we thought, well, we'll have the boards printed for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we did some research, found out about Oshpark, and put that together.
And they were beautiful.
They were beautiful. Oh.
And I love the colors. I love the colors of the Oshpark boards.
Them cuties.
Yep, cutie boards.
Cutie boards.
They were awesome. Little storks on them. Very cute.
Yeah. Anyway, so they arrived in December, and we were so busy with other stuff. And the point was, we also didn't just want to have the boards made for us, but we were going to go to TQFPs, thin mm-hmm. quad-flat packages, instead of DIPS, dual inline packages. So these chips are a lot smaller for the controller.
That right.
Reads the switches, turns on and off the LEDs, and mm-hmm. the biggest job is really keeping track of the timing
mm-hmm.
and then sending the signal to the oscillator to either turn on or not on a very short time scale to make the signal to send out message saying either MOE, MOI, MOS, or something else, or the call sign for the transmitter, or long-term tracking that has to be done very accurately to know on what minute to turn on, what second to turn on, and then a minute later to shut off, and then, anyway. So, yeah, we got the boards back in December, and we were so busy with other stuff. We had the two main things. Were the O-meet we're planning. We're mm-hmm. going out every weekend to Falls Lake. And whenever I could, I was trying to do stuff to help out with the makerspace you were running
right,
at school.
Right.
I couldn't come in, but I could help out by doing
and that
stuff.
Was big. That yeah. was bigger than we expected.
So I really tried to work as much as I could on these Oshpark boards and the next transmitter. You know, an hour here, an hour there, whenever I could. And you figure, well, a couple hours and you got the stuff kind of working. And they didn't work. And it was so frustrating because there were other things happening. And I had handmade board for TQFPs, for the little 7 millimeter by, I mean, no, 7 centimeter by 7 centimeter TQFP that holds the ATmega 328 that we were using. And I had to stop halfway through on trying to get that thing soldered. It was just too difficult. And it's not that the soldering itself is difficult for TQFPs if you have the right pads. It's that I had to bend all, you know, half the pins, every other pin I bent up and the other half down so that I could make the traces slightly bigger. Mm-hmm. Because by hand, making the traces were just too small.
Right.
And I got it partially built, but there was not enough pins for the transmitter. And I was making progress on the Oshpark boards, but I still really was frustrated and not understanding what was happening. And finally, Saturday, I had gotten back. I was still working on the Oshpark boards, but I got back to the handmade one. And I rewrote the code to just make it a bare minimal transmitter. Mm-hmm. That could just have two functions only. Mm-hmm. And reduced number of pins. And I put it together with the handmade PCB. And it kind of worked. Not totally, mm-hmm. kind of. Some of the pins, the input pins, weren't quite working. And I couldn't figure out why. Some of them seemed dead. And then the oscillator was never turning on. And that's what gave me the big clue. I was reading the voltages on the pins, and that one read, I can't remember exactly, I think it was like 2.1 volts or something. Now, it's supposed to be 0 or 5 volts. So if I made a mistake in the code, how could it be 2.1? And yet, I knew all the traces I'd tested ahead of time, and all the components I'd tested, and with the power off, the resistances seem to be perfectly fine everywhere. Mm-hmm. So the minor components had to be fine. So how the hell am I getting this partial
right
voltage? And that's when it started to really convince me that the chip was bad. And I must have damaged it during the soldering by heat.
Right.
I don't know if you remember, I first had that idea maybe a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know, I wonder if I'm overheating these guys. Yeah, I mean, it's never a problem I've ever had.
Right.
Right. But I always work with larger parts.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I had handmade, when I tested it, it worked okay. But I was only testing two of the pins.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Oshpark boards, just nothing was working.
Right.
They weren't even accepting. The hardware program, we have an Olimex, it couldn't talk to them.
And so, it was really disappointing.
It was so difficult.
Because you were going back over the board to see the problem that you maybe didn't see with the board, or maybe looking to see if the actual structure of the board, there is some kind of misconnection with or something that wasn't, you know, connecting straight through. And, you know, it was just ongoing trying to think of little things that could happen.
And we all know the Paris and the spring type of effect, mm-hmm. where you keep looking at something over and over and it's right there in front of you and you don't see the mistake.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got this in the back of my mind because this is the first time we've ever done it. What is it that I'm just not seeing? But no, I think it was just the first time soldering TQFPs. And I actually got that board to work on Saturday, and that was a first success. And mm-hmm. so it wasn't the Oshpark board, it was the handmade one. And the way I got it working is, I call it the hardware kludge. It's just crazy. I have dangling in midair a transistor, and the defective pin is feeding into it. And I calculated the values on it for the resistance,
mm-hmm.
so that he puts out 5 volts if the pin puts out 2.1 volts or whatever mm-hmm. it is. So when the pin just tries to reach 5 volts and just only gets 2.1, the transistor takes care of the rest and boosts it up to 5, and then the oscillator works. And now it works.
Wow.
So that was really cool. And then the second part came on Sunday. You know, that really was a clue, working on the manually built one, that heat was a problem. And I unsoldered the chips that were on the Oshpark boards, put new ones on. There was a little bit more troubleshooting. Remember, I had a short mm-hmm. on the reset pin, but I got a solvent. Now we have two of them that are working.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I can tell, they're working fine.
Right.
So after months and months, suddenly in a single weekend, I mean, it feels like, I can't describe the feeling.
Oh, yeah.
This is not just one of those, like in my blog entry, fantastic little successes. This is humongous.
Yeah. You know? Oh, it just, and it's just exciting to see that you built something, you're putting on parts, and it works. It's a board that you designed. And so all of that coming together is just fantastic.
And I was worried because, you know, we need these to be ready for, if we want the kids to be able to have an art of part in their makerspace next year.
Mm-hmm.
I need to be able to figure it out this summer and maybe the beginning of next year, or we don't, you know, we won't be ready.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, we were really excited. And so on Sunday, we went out into mm-hmm. the woods, and you were doing, still couldn't do too much running with your eyes. And
no.
So we did
heavy
really
walking.
Yeah. But
not so heavy, because it's like you're trying, well, for me, I'm trying to figure out the
what's
receiver
exactly.
And,
yeah.
and, you know, trying to
so
get
didn't
everything.
Didn't you find it, excuse me, didn't you find that was really, you wouldn't think it's that much more, I mean, you've done
oh,
it
yeah.
before, right?
Yeah. With two, I got totally lost, and I have a focus issue. I have a predator focus issue.
Yeah, I think so. Because I kept saying.
And I do when we have orienteering events where it's a sprint? Is that what they call them? Where you can go in
off.
Any different direction. And it's like predator confusion. So I don't get as many because I focus on like, I lose
it,
focus. I don't know.
How was it during the
ADD overload?
What was the one that you did and I couldn't because I volunteered?
Oh, the Bubba Goat.
The Bubba Goat. Because there, you guys all go together, but then you split, right?
Oh,
you have to follow. Did you end up being pulled? Can you choose which one you do?
You can at certain points. So you do so many and you can choose.
You can choose.
But only I got lost.
Yeah.
Really lost. Like no man's land kind of lost. And
with no one else around you?
With no one else around me. Yeah. And I did find one. I finally found it, but it took me like, you know, the one of those like 45 minutes, like, you know, that's useless. So it took me 45 minutes. And that's when I called them to tell them that I wasn't going to make it back on time because I didn't want anyone sent out for me. But I was so tired that I had to walk back slower.
You made it back, though. You made it back.
Yeah.
Home.
Oh, I made it back. And I didn't worry about making it back.
Right.
I didn't want there to be a search.
Right. Anyway. That's a while ago. This
one digression after another
one
for this one.
But this weekend on Sunday, we had a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're ready to try even more now.
Mm-hmm.
So, your topic of interest.
My topic of interest. Okay, so this week, Patrick has been pulled along to the Read to Me science program
with
the Makey Makey, whether he wants to or not.
Whether I want to or not.
Patrick,
I'm happy to help.
Yeah. Patrick and I are in some ways, it's challenging because.
It's very challenging for me.
Yeah. It's more challenging
for
you.
I just don't know what to do.
Yeah. I can step back and be like, well, this is where we're at for this group and. Let's work through this and move on.
Yeah.
This is
so
maybe
tell us,
part of
what's
their accomplishment.
The Reach Me program
so the Reach Me program is a program that they bring books that they give away. The books are donated by local bookstores, and they're great children's books, and they take them to communities to give out books to students so they can get books in their homes and improve the literacy. And so they go for an hour, they read stories to the kids, and the kids can take any of the books.
Is this a program just in Chapel Hill or North Carolina?
It's just in Chapel Hill. Mary Andrews is the one that started
She's
it here.
The starter?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was set up as to promote a summer reading program for students so that they could stay reading through the summer, where often the summer leaves huge gaps in students' growth, or just their actual reading level drops because they stop their reading regimen in the summer because they're no longer in the routine of school.
Right.
So this is a great program, really helps us, especially families of need, because it goes into communities that need that kind of assistance or could use that kind of assistance to really help build a home library.
So they invited you
they
asked for some
this
science
year
components.
They wanted to include a science component, so they talked to a group of middle school science teachers, and all of us are doing one activity with the group. We're each doing a different activity, and so in a week the kids will see five different science activities, five different people coming to their group.
So there's four other science teachers.
So there's four
this?
Other science teachers
cool.
doing this.
Do you
so,
know what some of them are doing?
No, because I don't. I really do want to know. And I hope at the end I'll get to see it all.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to compare notes and see what works.
So my idea was to set up this makerspace. I was hoping to get a middle school crowd because the science component was brought on to encourage middle school participation.
Mm-hmm.
So 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. Yeah. And because of the tradition behind the program, and it's been really good at recruiting primary school K through 5th grade. And the middle school students don't realize that there's something there for them. And so they're trying to get, you know, to pull them in with this. And
both days that I helped out, I noticed there was like maybe one kid that was a bit older.
That's what I was thinking.
But most of them were very young.
This week we went to two different Read to Me programs.
Yep.
And one was very young, which we went to today. And then we went to a little older one yesterday. I think it was older. Patrick says they looked about the same.
Yeah, I couldn't tell.
They were a little more independent learners. There are many more independent learners at the other one that we went to. And that's just confidence of the individual student. Setting up a makerspace with them and using the Makey Makey as our way to introduce them to what a makerspace is, you know, it was a neat idea.
Yeah.
It's really challenging.
It's very challenging because they're so young.
They're very
young. And
there's
a short amount of time.
And you have like an hour and they've never seen the Makey Makey hooked up.
It's also...
And they haven't kind of had that exploratory...
Right.
opportunity.
Right.
And it was important to me for it to be exploratory.
Yeah. Also, the Makey Makey, some of what makes it interesting is that you get to play around with stuff and you understand, oh, that's why it works.
Yeah.
It's electricity going. And they're at a level where that's not even in their that's not even in their world. The
I know.
Concept, right? So, you have to hold on to this to make it go because the current goes through. It's like, okay, I've got to hold on to this.
So,
got it.
Yeah,
it's like, right, there's no science here. It's just got to hold on.
Second grade to kindergarten, you get this kind of hold on to this, you know, to complete the circuit. You don't know what a circuit is, but that's good. Just say complete the circuit. And so Pat was like, for that group, I can see why you would want directed science education. And I'm like, I get what you're saying. I felt it. I was there. But at the same time, I'm like, we have to have something where they can just get their little eager hands on something and do something. And I haven't figured out what that is. Makey-makey may not be it for
Might be
them.
a little bit too
It might be a little
advanced.
too advanced. However, it's what we have right now,
Yeah,
and I'm going with it,
go with it.
because I can't think of another one,
Yeah.
and I have been trying to, but
Yeah.
limited time, I guess. But the people that have been involved in the group seem to be very excited about us coming,
Yeah, they
and
were
they
all
seem
very
very
nice every time,
happy,
yeah.
and
Yeah.
so I think it's
Yeah.
getting well
Makes me feel
received.
good because sometimes I feel like, so what am I doing here? I'm not really useful. And as a matter of fact, today it was a little bit better because for some of it I could step back and let the kids play, and they were more trying to figure things out, and that was a bit of a first. So that felt a bit better.
So,
I mean, actually, that's something we didn't mention, but that I've mentioned to you several times is this thing that's happening with me. I don't know, it must be different mannerisms, but it seems like, especially the first day, if I just put a single finger on their computer or their makey-makey or wire
or their project,
or
whatever
their
they're building.
project, they'd ask me to help and to show them, but if I put a single finger, it's like suddenly they want me to do it. And they don't know what to do anymore, and it's like, no, you have to do it.
And I'm wondering if it's like, mannerisms I've learned as a teacher,
There.
that the kids like look at me, they're like, she's not going to do it. I can tell by that look.
Yeah.
Or if it's a gender difference
Yeah.
that
I don't know.
they're working with a man, and they don't usually work with men because there's very few male teachers,
Yeah.
especially in primary. It's predominantly female. So I don't know.
I had several kids ask me, "Are you a teacher?" I'm like, "No, I'm a helper." That's what I am in life. I'm a helper.
But anyway, it's been fun. It's been challenging, and it's really, it's an interesting challenge that we haven't found the
Yep.
solution to.
No.
But anyway,
But it's good what we're doing, I guess. So,
yeah, I think
better than nothing.
it's providing
We're learning.
a small science experiment or experience for kids that wouldn't have had it otherwise, and I
If
think that's the score.
nothing else, it's like computers aren't just something you sit at and punch keys to play games and stuff. You can hook something into it, and somehow something happens in the world that you can control, and in the computer it changes something, and so there's definitely that in that kind of some of the kids. Oh, this is interesting.
Yeah, definitely. So,
Future
future
plans.
plans. Okay, we're
Man, you've got one line. Look at this. Whew.
Well, okay, I wanted to really focus on what was most important right now. So I want to read up on and choose a website server,
A web hosting?
a
You
web
wrote web
hosting
hosting site.
site so that we could
Web
actually
hosting
host
service?
our
Into a place that's
website.
more permanent.
Yeah, that's more
Yeah.
permanent. That's our goal. It's been hard.
Well, it's funny. I mean, this is the right way, right?
Yeah.
We're driven by what we're doing.
Right.
And then the Island CT whole project or whatever is just a way to talk about what we're doing and to put it out there for other people and invite them in sometimes, but it's always secondary. And I think I like it that way.
Yeah.
The audio doesn't get processed because we're doing something even more awesome that shows up in the next one, right? So yeah, I am a little bit late with the audio, but I totally agree. That's big.
Oh!
We have to get it done by the end of the summer.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. And my other future plan?
Yep.
So we forgot to mention this. So I noticed this video on TED Talks, and it was actually talked about it on NPR, where this guy who, he was in advertising. He had a very successful career, but then he found that he was going to work, driving home, getting up in the morning, getting ready and going to work. And he felt like there was no life in his routine. And so his goal was to take 1 minute of video and to use that 1 minute, or not 1 minute, sorry, 1 second of video to remember that day with. And he, in doing this, he said that, you know, at the end of the year, he had like 3 to 4 minutes of video. And
I just took a video.
Total.
2 seconds.
Yeah.
Well, it's a little longer.
And he's like, it was just a really neat way of remembering a year.
Yeah.
And it challenged him to think of just something slightly different to do in his day that he could acknowledge.
You know, I certainly don't have that feeling of, you know, oh, I'm just not getting moving ahead and stuff. I just feel like I've worked on so much. But I still love this idea of just, doesn't have to be a second a day or something, just having these ultra short, you take a video, done, and then you can do a montage later on.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a second a day, maybe some, you know, and then go back through and have this thing that kind of, and you remember we were discussing how neat it was that, you know, some days I'll be some things that are 3 or 4 things that are all really important, and other days there's like nothing. But you can only choose one per day, and you have to choose one for each day, right?
Yeah.
So we're not really doing that or anything.
No,
but
we
started to take videos ultra short like that, like we've never done. And it's been a lot of fun thinking about what we've tried to capture and stuff.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, something that I still have to figure out how to do, but I think it will be a fun project to take on. Okay, so
you didn't mention the gym. Oh, is that still happening?
It is, but so I want to get more into reading about GM. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'll be able to do the project this year, but I will be able to get a base for it at least.
Yeah.
My eyesight and the ability to read on the computer, it has slowed me down a lot, but it's also started to improve again. So I'm hoping in the next month I'll have it a lot more control over it, and then maybe be able to weed through some things.
And you're going up to Canada?
And I'm going up to Canada with Luke. Yep.
So visit family?
Leaving early.
Yep. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, in a few hours?
Yeah.
it's 8 in the evening now, about, right?
Mm-hmm. So I'll be leaving at 3.
In theory, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I'm putting my stuff in the car tonight, so we'll be there.
I think it'll happen.
Yeah.
Luke seems pretty
gung-ho. He's excited. Too,
so. Anyway, so all of these things, well, of course, getting the SI-5351 going, that does all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
We've got plans to move to more powerful, the transmitters we've designed. I mean, we didn't design them. We designed them from other designs. And the main one is Jerry Boyd, who I met a few years ago at an ARDF. And he created these micro foxes, he called them. And that's basically what we're using. But we're going for something a little bit more power. And, you know, I don't want to build anymore until I have the SI-5351 because I want to replace the crystal in the oscillator with the SI-5351. So definitely major work on that. By the way, Jason Mildrum, I just found out today, he also wrote an Arduino library.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, we have a couple laying around.
Mm-hmm.
maybe I'll try that, see if it's got the same problem or what. So we have two SI5351 ports from Adafruit. So anyway, so that's a future plan. Put together more powerful 80 meter transmitters, of course. You know, that'll come soon after. Plans for that. Parts, we have already most of the parts. Start work on the 2 meter transmitters.
Right.
Work on the Island CT. You know those small projects we're going to talk. I started putting them together for the makerspace next year.
Right.
Small projects for the kids that need an in to work on, and then slightly more advanced ones for kids that want to find something to do, but they don't know what to go on next. So I still haven't given you the one that I made for you to tell me what you think. But you have your Raspberry Pi 2 now.
Yeah, I'm hoping to dig into that too. It's so, just a matter of my site, and I think when we come back from Bear Island.
So if I take I'll over your to. Old one, maybe I'll put them. That's Jedi Pi, the old one. I'll pretend that's one of the school ones because it ends up at the school anyway, all the time.
Yeah, it does.
I'll put them on there, and then you can take Jedi Pi and work on the projects and tell me, does that make sense for eighth graders or not?
So, yeah, that sounds great.
So those special projects for the makerspace. Anchor practice is just basically, it's not happening.
No, but we have to, well.
That's up to you.
Yeah.
It's ready to go every evening, but
it's
been difficult with the eyes and
stuff.
I mean, it doesn't take much, but, you know.
Yeah.
Tired in the evening.
No, but I'm excited to keep that up too.
Anyway. And of course, Bear Island. In another, it's got to be less than 2 weeks now.
It is. It is. Yeah. So, very exciting.
Yep.
So, that's our regroup. And
anyway, that's it.
Didn't revive.
We went over again.
Oh.
Got to do something about this.
I know. Thank you for listening.
Okay. That's good.
It is time for the wrap-up.
So, it's time for the wrap-up. Let's get this done.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, that's me.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for listening to the Island CT podcast.
Make sure to check out our blog.
Goodbye.